From Lock Haven to York, Saxonburg to Windburg, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, Governor Tom Wolf has again proposed a misguided and unrealistic so-called climate action plan. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capitol Watch discussion. And congressional and legislative redistricting is underway. Once again, the left is trying to change the rules to gain an advantage. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Yet another Democratic state representative finds himself in legal trouble. State Representative Kevin Boyle of Philadelphia was arrested late Friday and charged with harassment and with violating a protection from abuse order. Earlier in the week, House Democratic leadership had stripped Boyle of his committee chairmanship and limited his access to the state capitol. Governor Tom Wolf has called upon Boyle to resign in wake of the charges. The divide over mask mandates continues in Harrisburg. The Senate Education Committee approved a bill that would give parents and guardians the right to decide for themselves whether or not their child wears a mask while at school. Republicans are determined to counter Governor Tom Wolf's mask mandate, requiring students to wear masks, and they appear to have the votes needed to pass the legislation through both chambers. However, Wolf will have the final say and is expected to veto the bill. Several lawmakers are also working to overturn the mask mandate in the courts. That process is ongoing. Senate Republicans are also advancing a bill that would increase the number of poll workers a candidate can have at each individual precinct to 3. Current law allows 2 poll watchers per candidate. The bill would also allow poll watchers to be from anywhere in the state rather than be restricted to residents of the county in which the precinct is located, as is now required. The bill is part of a wider GOP effort to ensure election integrity in the wake of ongoing concerns over the conduct of last year's presidential election. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Governor Tom Wolf has proposed his 2021 Climate Action Plan, which again overstates the threat of climate change and offers so-called solutions which will do little to nothing to affect climate change, but which will have a dramatically harmful effect on the state's economy. Here to discuss the issue is our Capitol Watch crew. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars, Matt Briette, President and CEO of Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, great to be with you.
And with you, David, as well.
And the one, the only, the truly awesome Rebecca Euler, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, great to be with you.
Great to be back here with you again, David.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, we've had all these years to work with Governor Wolf, and I really, the one quality of his that I admire most of all is just his sheer enthusiasm and his belief in himself that that he rolled out this week plans for our electrical grid that even though they're completely fly in the face of the laws of physics, that the governor, he's out there and he's going to boost that plan with everything he's got. He's just a cheerful little fella, isn't he?
Yes. Well, the governor announced his Pennsylvania Climate Action Plan 2021 this past week, which sets out 18 actions that would allow us to meet his 2025 and 2050 statewide emissions reduction goals.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at.
That's what we're looking at. And so, again,
we're going to solve climate change in Pennsylvania alone. Is that?
So it's a global issue.
Yeah.
that we're going to ignore the 49 other states and every other country on Earth and just deal with it ourselves.
You mean so, the other 95% of the world?
99% actually. But the best part about this is that they're gonna go after our electrical grid, the means by which that electricity is delivered to all of us who listen to this show.
You're probably
using it right now to hear us on this broadcast, and that it will be done without any carbon. So now never mind that
– let me guess. Tightly wound rubber bands.
Maybe. Or it could be hamster wheels. Okay. I'm not sure.
It's
a lot of hamsters.
The farmers would like that.
Never mind that coal and natural gas constitute like two-thirds of Pennsylvania's power generation at this moment in time. Furthermore, you also pay no attention to all of the industrial inputs that go along with things like solar energy and wind energy. We're going to pretend for purposes of Governor Wolf's policy that all those things just spring up like dandelions and that you don't have to use any carbon to make for example, the steel towers on which the wind turbines rest or, the concrete to keep those towers in the air or, you know, any of the cadmium and lithium and all the other stuff that goes into these electronic devices. We're going to pretend that all those just like –
he seriously puts these things out here.
Yes.
Yeah, and while we're kind of joking, there are people who have bought into this agenda and it's almost a religious-like faith that we can
– it is.
You know, buying into these things that defies reality.
Yes. And so, I mean, Rebecca, you and your industry of logistics and moving stuff and having the trucks on the highways, part of the governor's plan goes directly towards you and your people.
Yeah. It's not just the energy grid. Like you said, it's also increasing the use of electric vehicles too. So it would be requiring zero emissions vehicles across the board, including trucks, I think. Although he doesn't go into too much detail in here, I know that he's planning on signing on to the California emission standards that have been proposed out in the California. The CARB, the California Air Resources Board, has passed last year. So they have a low NOx regulation that
nitrous oxide
that they recently passed, and they also have a clean trucks rule, which is mandating electric no emissions vehicles,
and
zero
this,
emissions
and
vehicles.
Again, just to clarify here for the listeners, the they that Rebecca is talking about is the state legislature of California in Sacramento,
yes,
or other regulatory or governmental
unelected
bodies,
yes, yeah,
right,
from a state on the other side of the continent from us that Governor Wolf would impose upon us standards that were not set by our own elected officials or duly designated authorities for the 67 counties of Pennsylvania, but
right,
rather to just import from – to impose this on us from a completely different jurisdiction.
That's right. And I know we've talked a lot about REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, which is part of the governor's plan here,
right,
to move forward restricting emissions from energy producers. But that actually went through the regulatory process here in Pennsylvania. It had a lot of comments. I think it had a record set number of comments from Pennsylvanians who were interested in commenting on that. The CARB emissions requirements that we're talking about from California get absolutely no vetting before Pennsylvania citizens because they are automatically adopted here in Pennsylvania. So we've essentially turned over our vehicle emission standards to California's people, like you said.
You know, the irony in all this, I don't know if that's the right word or the insanity might be better, is that in order to get to all these places where we're, hey, all electric vehicles, you need fossil fuels. I mean, you don't create the things that run these cars and without fossil fuels.
Wait, Matt, you're telling me that there are industrial inputs?
I just testified on this issue for trucks on Monday and talked about how we need bridge technologies. So just going back, I mean, clean diesel engines today are 99% cleaner than 1970 models. So just in the past 20 years, the trucking industry has slashed emissions over 90% just in the past 20 years. It's amazing how much cleaner they are.
Well, this is – I wish – Rebecca, this is the conversation that I wish we could have in public because, you know, again, we're the three of us were of like a similar vintage. And I remember, you know, seeing those trucks on the road. And
yeah,
today,
with the smoke.
Today it's genuinely shocking to see a vehicle actually belch out smoke. But days gone by – every single vehicle on the road was like that, and the trucks especially so. Like we've made, as a society, America has made so much progress in improving the quality of the air, the quality of the water, the overall environmental conditions in which people you know, live and work every day. And yet, for the green fanatics, it's not enough. It'll never be enough. And also that we're not allowed to have any kind of meaningful benchmarking, not only against our own past, but against every other country in the world. Products that are made in China are about 4 to 5 times as carbon intensive as the same product made in the United States. China is the world's largest polluter, and that their emissions are growing, where ours are decreasing even as our economy continues to expand. So my argument would be, hey, if you want to reduce global carbon emissions, then we should reshore all of that industrial production back home to America where it can be done under conditions that are much more clean and safe and less impactful to the environment.
Yeah, and that's a great point because I know I just haven't had the numbers in front of me that our GDP has grown 262% since 1970, but our emissions have decreased 73%. So we are a growing economy, yet it's cleaner and cleaner as we go. Technology is getting better and better.
Correct.
But I think the problem is where you start to mandate technologies. So this drive toward electrification, like Matt said, it's kind of like there has to be a step in between that and this.
Yeah. And mandating, even if you sustain that, you're still going to be reliant on a lot of the technologies we still use today. And
right.
That's a good thing. We should have a combination of all that. But to demonize this, as Governor Wolf does, and this idea that we can move away entirely from fossil fuels is just – it's a fantasy land.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and he might as well just mandate, you know, dilithium crystals or, you know, or you know, mother boxes or infinity stones, and we'll power our economy that way. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners. So again, we've got the Wolf administration in its dying throes, that we're down to the last, you know, the last, what, 15 months of this sad and bizarre spectacle. And so it's going to be a matter of the governor trying to, you know, push out as much of this stuff as he can during the time that he has left in office.
But the challenge, David, in this is that this is a plank in the Democrat Party's, you know, you'd say they're probably their top three, right, that our greatest existential threat are not terrorists from other countries, but it's climate change, right? And that therefore we should be willing to do whatever it takes in order to combat it. And so that's become an article of faith. And it has a religious fervor to it, and one party has embraced it. And I would say it's not because that those on the other party have ignored these things, because it's really the capitalists, as Rebecca's pointed out, that has dramatically reduced the pollution that's going out despite the dramatic growth in number of cars on the road and trucks, all of that.
Well, and of course, it's the private sector that drives innovation, mm-hmm. and that, you know, in particular, the manufacturing sector is the number one investor in research and development. And so we need market competition to, you know, to help to bring to bear these kinds of changes and breakthrough technologies that will, you know, achieve, you know, greater levels of energy generation with lower emissions, and that process of continuous improvement, in large measure because it's, you know, it's what consumers are demanding.
But we all want cleaner air, clean water, all of that.
Absolutely, yes. But the idea that government can just mandate this stuff into existence is really foolhardy, to somehow pretend that you don't have to mine rare earth minerals, mm-hmm. which is done, you know, in foreign countries under really poor conditions, and that even more that those rare earths have to be refined, which is a very intensely polluting industrial mm-hmm. process, that, you know, that you just – that these American leftists, they just see the Tesla, you know, roll off the delivery truck, and like that's where the whole process starts. Like no, and again the lithium, the amount of lithium that we're going to need to compose the batteries of every vehicle, if every vehicle has to be an electric vehicle, like we're talking about a volume of a difficult to obtain element that it's like you stack them up, it would go to the moon.
And interesting, you know, the battery in a heavy duty electric truck weighs 4,000 pounds.
Well, and that battery and the lithium ion have been igniting in some cars.
Yeah, there's
and
a there's, fire
there's,
problem
a, yeah,
with
there's
that.
A fire problem.
Yes.
And I was reading about this just today about the effort to do a solid state type of battery where you eliminate some of the fire hazards. But we are so far away from that becoming an economical way of even, you know, for me, I would love an electric vehicle, but I can't plug in every couple hundred miles when I am putting 30,000 miles on my car every year. That just is not feasible. So these are things that, again, if Governor Wolf could wave this magic wand, it'd be wonderful. But he does not have a magic wand.
Correct.
Magical thinking does not equal results here.
Yes. Yes. And so in terms of the practical realities that, Rebecca, that your folks would face, like what's the response been from the trucking industry?
Well, don't get me wrong. I think everyone is, like Matt said, we all support, you know, cleaner technologies and we all believe in choices. But there are lots of choices to be had, and especially in the trucking industry with regard to the fuel you use. Electric trucks are one option, but because they're so expensive, they're three times more expensive than a normal diesel truck. And the electric infrastructure that's used to charge them, one charging station costs about $150,000. So, of course, you would need multiple charging stations for all the trucks you need. And a truck can only go 250 miles on a charge.
And how many windmills do you need to power that or solar panels, since we're going to get rid of coal and natural gas, all these other energy sources? That's where this is just – if people think about these things, you realize our economy would shut down if they had their way.
Well, trucks are – we know they haul 88% of consumer products in Pennsylvania. So if you make it difficult for truckers to do their job or expensive to do their job, that's going to get passed on to consumers.
Well, good thing that we shut down any pipeline building so that we force it all on trucks, right?
Right. That is true.
This is where policies matter and, you know, holistic approaches to solving these problems is required.
So for some big fleets that have, you know, have the wherewithal to afford electric trucks, I think it's a great option. But for others, I mean, we have compressed natural gas. We have liquid natural gas that are working well for other types of fleets that are much cleaner. For some fleets are just using biodiesel and renewable diesel, which is also a great option. It depends on the driver. It depends on the truck. It depends on the business they're in. It depends on a lot of things. So we need to actually make sure that there are options, that the market is driving the most efficient technologies for the business. So that's the most important thing. And farther down the road, hydrogen fuel cell batteries, I think, are going to come about at some point soon. But if we mandate electric trucks, that's going to put all of these other technologies, you know, on the back seat, and they're not going to develop any farther, and we're not going to see any more innovation. So mandates are just not helpful.
And it's that opportunity cost, Rebecca.
Right.
You're exactly right. It's what we will miss out on because of all of the misdirected resources that go where they have to go to comply with government fiat. Tom Wolf is so sure that he has all the answers that he doesn't have to get input from anybody else, including the people who would be most directly affected by these decisions
he's making. Come ask you your thoughts or manufacturer's
Sadly, no. I've been waiting a long time for my phone to ring, about 7 years now.
You know, along these lines, like, I think it would be helpful just because I think so few people know this fact, and we talked a little bit about how much cleaner things are today, but our air is incredibly cleaner than it was just a couple mm-hmm. decades ago. I mean, I just want to look at some of these numbers. Total emissions in Pennsylvania are down 88%.
Over what time?
Since 1990, 88%.
I mean, 1990 wasn't like our polluting years, right? I mean, that's 20 years after you couldn't see the skies in Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Yep. Nitrous oxide down 83%. SOx emissions down 93%. Sulfur oxide.
Yes.
Yep.
Particulate matter
down 31% since 1990.
Again, while we're adding millions of people.
Volatile organic compounds down 60%.
60%. Yep.
Is there anything that we've seen go up?
No.
I mean, all of these harmful things that we've been eradicating them through the private enterprise, free enterprise, markets have demanded this.
Exactly. Yep.
And furthermore, you know, when we talk about a Paris Climate Accord, the air in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and New York and Los Angeles and Chicago are all cleaner than the air in Paris. So, you know, again, just to benchmark the United States up against – other countries, especially the, you know, high polluting countries like China and India and Brazil and Russia. Like, we've come a long way. We're the ones who are on the right path. And if anything, we should be looking to find a way to help those other countries to modernize in a more environmentally friendly manner rather than just to let them pollute with impunity while we snuff out our own prosperity.
Well, that's the question that I don't think they're ever forced to answer is that you're essentially talking about taking a teaspoon to the ocean mm-hmm. and telling us you're going to lower its level. Right. I mean, when you've got all these other countries that are not abiding by this notion that Tom Wolf can impose this and somehow we're going to, you know, reduce the probability of climate change, which, of course, we all agree the climate is changing. It's always changing.
It always
right.
Has. Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, I think it's just nobody asked them of like, OK, at what cost and what benefit are we going to gain from it? And there's there's really no cost that they would argue is too high for us to not do this. Because again, it's an article of faith that this is an existential threat and therefore we must act and set aside any cost.
And that leads to the kind of fanaticism that you've seen out of the Wolf
right.
administration. So anyway, sad to say we have to leave it there for now. But as ever, great to be with you good folks. And thanks for your time. Matt, where can people go to learn more about you and Commonwealth Partners?
Yes, go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Outstanding. Rebecca, where can people go to learn more about you and the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
We are at pmta.org.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. From Rebecca and Matt and me, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Pennsylvania, as is every other state in the nation, is now engaged in the process of redrawing congressional and legislative district lines. In most states, the process is controlled by one party, with Republicans holding power in more states than Democrats. Republicans are further advantaged by a shift in population, and therefore congressional districts, to southern states. As is typical when they cannot win by following the rules, Democrats are seeking to change the rules. Although Pennsylvania is one of the few states with a divided power dynamic, Republicans control the legislature and the governor is a Democrat, Democrats and their allies in the legacy media have for months been spinning the big lie that the system is rigged in favor of Republicans. The process of enacting new congressional district lines is exactly the same as the process for passing any law. The new map will be introduced as a bill, which must win a majority of votes in both the state House and the state Senate, and then be signed by the governor. Committees in both houses of the legislature are holding hearings and have established mechanisms for public input. If you think the process of enacting laws is fair, then it follows the process of congressional redistricting is fair. A left-wing group known as Fair Districts PA, which more appropriately should be named Democrat Districts PA, attempted to change the ground rules by replacing that process with a commission of citizens who supposedly would bring no political bias to the table. That, of course, was a completely unrealistic expectation, and the group's efforts to subvert the process failed. But the left is nothing if not persistent. Having failed to supplant the constitutional process with a citizens' commission, they are now working hard to pervert the proceedings through tweaks designed to either give Democrats the advantage or lay the groundwork for legal challenges. As an example, a parallel effort is underway to redraw state legislative district lines. That process is substantially different in that a commission comprised of the Republican and Democrat leaders of both the House and Senate, along with one independent member, will draw the lines. Despite being two distinctly different processes, the underlying legal requirements for drawing district lines are the same for both congressional and legislative redistricting. The left made its first ploy to change the rules in the Legislative Redistricting Commission by seeking to have inmates incarcerated in state prisons counted in the population of the area in which they previously resided, rather than in the district where the correctional facility, their current residence, is located. This seemingly innocuous change would have a big impact. Most correctional facilities are located in smaller, more rural, and therefore more Republican-leaning communities, while the inmate population largely originated in urban, more Democrat-leaning areas. The change in where that population is counted could result in a shift of districts to urban areas. The commission's independent member, former University of Pittsburgh Chancellor Mark Nordenberg, initially sided with Democrats in approving the change. But Republicans, led by Senate Majority Leader Kim Ward, proposed a compromise which would count any inmate whose sentence extended past 2030 in the location of the prison. Those whose sentences are set to expire before then will be counted in their pre-incarceration location. That satisfied Nordenberg, who then voted with Republicans to enact the compromise. This is just one of what will surely be many efforts by the left to change the ground rules to do exactly what they claim to oppose, gerrymandered congressional and legislative district maps. Thus, the big lie. Their goal is not fair districts, but rather districts gerrymandered to their advantage. And the left has a trump card. Nationally, Democrats are following a sue-until-it's-blue strategy, meaning what they can't get following the rules, they will seek to accomplish in the courts. In Penns Woods, a highly political, activist state Supreme Court has already re-gerrymandered congressional district lines once. There is no reason to believe that they will not do it again. The stakes are high. The U.S. House of Representatives is almost evenly divided, and majority control largely hinges on the outcome of the congressional redistricting process. Given their past success at stealing elections by changing the rules, Democrats are implementing the same strategy with redistricting. Republicans, beware. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WKVE-FM in Mount Pleasant, WKFB-AM in Gannett, along with WKHB-FM in Irwin, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.